Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show.
No matter how far.
Don't worry, baby.
Just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. You don't have to worry. Cause baby, there ain't no mountain high enough.
And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is the program that no matter what the crisis, we'll find solutions and we'll provide you with the most accurate information on everything involving health, nutrition, the environment, and important issues like the coronavirus. Now, we no longer have a Facebook page, which is good. I'm happy about that. So what we have is we have unlimited. We were limited to 5,000 people on the Facebook. But we're not limited here, so at prn.fm, you can go and every day you will see new information on the latest peer review journal articles from respected institutions where they're talking as if, well, I was writing the articles. Good information. For example, today from the University of New South Wales, which is in Australia, published in a highly respected journal, Science, restoring the NAD could reduce DNA damage accumulation. That's a big deal because that means we can slow down, even reverse many aspects of aging. And I'm in the first week of a 8-week program here, as you know, and plus people are doing it at home, and I'll give them some information in a little bit. And everyone here is taking NAD. But the last time they took NAD, a little larger amounts than what most of the science recommends, but we're seeing that there's a difference between clinical experience, which I have an abundance of, having done 44 separate clinical studies, counseled tens of thousands of people, and was research director and research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology in anti-aging medicine. So if they're suggesting 20 milligrams of NAD, and I'm finding that 100 is much more beneficial than I always will give an additional comment onto these articles. So we're going to talk about that in about 15 other topics today. Then, to let you know what we're doing before we get to the subjects of anti-aging itself, where I'll have lectures in cellular biology and nutritional biochemistry and how to improve your biochemistry and what will turn on and off the aging process, all that will be coming up. And people at home will be getting those lectures because we're filming those lectures. I flew my camera crew in. They did some filming. And the first of those films are up on prn.fm. And they'll be put up on, Jesse will post them up on a special YouTube. But for now, Jesse will let me know a little later on in the program where you can go to watch this. Now, yesterday I did a talk, which was 44 minutes filmed, and it's a different type of talk now, and I think you'll find it interesting. I'm doing a brief lecture, maybe 10 minutes, 15 at the most. Then I turn those, then I'll read something from a book and then get them to respond to it of what does this mean to them. And some very insightful and profound statements were made by all the senior citizens here. That's good. So you get to hear them. And it's like calling in on our voicemail and giving comments, which we've had some wonderful comments. I thank you all for doing that. Remember, we are a voice for the voiceless. So here, we don't edit, we don't exclude unless you're in a vulgar rant, in which case that doesn't empower anybody. But you can be impassioned by things, and you have your own unique perspective. And we want multiple perspectives on every issue because we never know which is going to be useful to us, which will open up our own consciousness to a greater awareness. And then last night, we filmed another lecture, and last night's lecture had to do with the topic of why do we not grow beyond our limitations? And it's because of a concept that we rarely discuss, and that is we are limited by our dark side, meaning we're all limited at some level by our conditioning, especially if that conditioning and the information we received earlier in life is not accurate. even with the best of intents, and let's just be optimistic and positive and say most of the people in our life, school teachers, aunts, uncles, grandparents, parents, they want the best for us. But what if they themselves are passing on misinformation? Then do we have the ability to change it? Do we get older and get into a comfort zone where the older we get, the more resistant we are to change personally? And that's what I've always found, and that's the biggest challenge. But I believe that the future, at least the near future, can be helped on all levels if we encourage senior citizens to work together in groups to provide information based upon a person's life work to younger people who may have questions and have a line they can call in, and they are directed to someone who's retired but has a lot of knowledge and still has passion, wants to help other people and leave a legacy, and they can help people for free. We have millions of retired people who are wonderful human beings, and they're not called upon for anything today. So that's a whole positive idea. I'm working on it now, and I'm working on, within the next 6 months, setting up a center with our IT people getting me the technology that would do it, where people from all over the United States, in fact, all over the world, will be standing by. And they'll tell us which hours of which days, maybe start with 5 hours a week. That's not a lot. And that they would make themselves available if someone had a question or a concern in their area of expertise. And then a computer system would automatically, let's say you called in and you said, I don't know how to budget myself. I don't have enough money for food and rent or mortgage payment and electricity and medications. There's just not enough. What do I do? Well, then maybe financial planners who have a lifetime of experience helping people better manage their money or have other ways that you can help yourself, that call would go directly to them. And then that way you would have some input that you wouldn't have otherwise. And so we have at least 100,000 health coaches in the United States alone, and they would be able to answer questions about health. So anyhow, I'm working on that to help people. So lots going on and a lot of good stuff. So I did a talk about how do we overcome the dark side and how do we know we're on the dark side? How do we know we're making decisions from our limitations and fears and insecurities, which are always going to be the wrong choices? That was last night's lecture. But I did the lecture, then we showed, and I put the camera, it's not perfect by any means, but I put the camera in front of a large screen TV that they're all in the theater watching, so that when people are watching the lecture, they also get to see the documentary. And it's a very powerful documentary. And that's about 20 minutes. And then there's comments afterwards. Then it's time for people to say, okay, here's what I found. And once again, it hit them like a thunderbolt. Some of the awarenesses, wow, now I realize something. And now they'll spend the day in the afternoon when we have 3 hours of nature time where we're out meditating in silence and writing in our journals and deconstructing the problems in our life to try to figure it out. And now they have some new insights. So this is what we're doing. It's liberating. Someone came up to me last night, an 80-year-old woman, and she said, I've been a school teacher my whole life, and I've had problems because I wanted to get the kids to be critical thinkers, and I had to teach to their level of consciousness, but not as if they were dumb or incapable of learning. And she said, I was criticized by other teachers. One teacher in particular was angry at me because my students were all passing tests, not because I taught to the test, but because they were learning how to think critically. And she said, for that, for having students pass tests not based upon being coached and cheating and dumbing down the test, but by critical thinking and skills of different way of making topics interesting. And she gave an example. She said, I'll have the kids spend a day or the class writing poems. And then we take the poems, and then other people in the class who don't write the poems write music from the poems, from the lyrics. And then you suddenly, when you have someone singing it or playing it, it really brings out the creativity in people. And then everybody realizes now they're learning English, they're learning grammar, they're learning things, but a different way. And she said, and I've had to feel guilt about this. My students are learning, and yet I'm the one who's criticized. So that was a part of the discussion, and you'll hear that, part of that today. Now it's a 44-minute tape. We're only going to play half of it, because we also want to throw a few more tapes at you today, including one on how Obama surveilled Cheryl Atkinson, and yet he's never been called out or criticized for being the primary sponsor of mass surveillance in America. Also, the effects of aluminum in vaccines on your body. And then, I'm not sure if we'll get to this or not, but John Haidt on the codifying of the American mind. That's not a long piece. We're going to try to go to that one first, actually. So Jesse will do that first. So that's our program. Now, let's go to the science and the health and nutrition part of this. In the current issue of Science Magazine, according to the University of New South Wales, they have a finding by Professor David Sinclair and his colleagues of the ability for a precursor of nicotinamide, adenine dinucleotide, or NAD, to increase the repair of DNA damage that results from aging or exposure to radiation. And this is, according to him, I'm quoting, quote, "This is the closest we are to a safe and effective anti-aging drug that's perhaps only 3 to 5 years away from being on the market if the trials go well," end quote. Well, hello, NAD is not a drug. It's a nutrient, and it's safe and effective, and it's on the market now. But look at the mindset. Deconstruct this for a moment. Let's break this down. A highly respected professor, very, very insightful, wants to slow down and repair the damage from aging. Good. All on board. Hands up. But then, once he discovers that NAD can do this, increase the repair, now they want to make a drug from NAD, which they can patent, and everyone, you know, gets nominated for a Nobel Prize in medicine, and everyone makes, you know, gazillion dollars. And we do this all the time. Resveratrol is another example. You know, the people who've got the patent on resveratrol are making a fortune. I think it's up at Harvard. But you can just get resveratrol by eating grapes and drinking grape juice or taking a supplement of resveratrol. So we've commodified nature to a point of exploiting it in some patentable form instead of looking at it in its natural form. So NAD, it's inexpensive. It's really good. It's one of the 10 superstars to slow down the aging process. From the National University of Singapore School of Medicine, published in the peer-reviewed journal Aging, because I never go back and look at any of my articles, but I believe that was one of the peer-reviewed journals I published the Egg Project in, showing that all foods contain all 8 essential amino acids in different balances, and therefore you never have to eat anything from an animal, no eggs, meat, dairy, chicken, fish, pork, veal, in order to get your essential amino acids. In any case, they're saying that drinking tea supports a healthy brain. All right. According to this study, and they're based upon previous research, they're doing confirmation research, you can reduce cognitive decline, which we want, by drinking tea. And they had a group of tea drinkers age 60 and older, and they drank tea, and then they did neuropsychological tests, evaluated cognitive function and MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, to access the brain connectivity. And those who consumed the most tea, and most of these were green teas, had better organized brain regions and cognitive function compared to those who were not tea drinkers. So, more green tea, healthier brains, and that's published in Aging. Now, not to be outdone, the Kermit University of Medical Science, which is in Iran. Isn't it interesting? And Richard Gale and I were talking about this the other morning, because we're up early. We're up at 4 and we're talking, we're reading hundreds of scientific studies, selecting the ones that we will post. And remember, the best place in the world for you to go now, every morning or throughout the day, to read what is important that can help you live a longer and healthier life and prevent disease and overcome disease, is prn.fm. And then scroll down and you'll see health and nutrition. You'll also see we've added a new section yesterday afternoon, and we're adding to it. In fact, anyone in this audience who is 60 or over, if you have a photograph of yourself where you believe that you represent a new model for aging, send it to us. A little background on yourself. We'll post it, and again, we want to show people who are 60 and over, you do not have to age like everyone else. You do not have to suffer the mental decline, the forgetfulness, your loss of body mass, your loss of libido, your loss of bone density, gum diseases, gingivitis, periodontal conditions, receding gums, heart irregularities, congestive heart failure, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancers, skin wrinkling, hair falling out. These are not normal. You can be vital and years, decades younger at the biological level. Now, mind you, some of you have been paying attention and applying information. You've been listening to me, some people for 50 years, half a century. Others, maybe the last year. But you can reverse your biological aging. That's what I'm doing right now with two groups of people, one here on campus, up in the mountains, beautiful, magnificent. I'm looking out the window right now at eagles in a tree. And about an hour ago, when I was sitting here writing, there was a peacock that roosted right on the branch right below the eagles. I've never seen anything like this. He's a big, big bird. But generally, you will not have any other bird around an eagle because it's going to be the eagle's lunch. And yet, they have this compatibility. Every night, the peacock flies up. And there are the eagles. There's no fighting. Interesting. Anyhow, here is just one of the most beautiful, serene, quiet, healthy places. Everybody here is healthy. Nobody has any viruses. I mean, and tons of food, and they're drinking their green juices and red juices and more food than you could ever imagine. And we're also growing food, and I'm filming every part of raising this greenhouse, so I'm going to post it as a motivation for you to start doing your own hydroponic house. So you're going to see how to grow sprouts, microgreens, all that. It's all coming. It's a very exciting time, in spite of all the crisis that we're faced with. In any case, back here, the green tea helps cystitis sufferers and prevents antibiotic resistance. This is according to the Kerman University of Medical Science, and more studies we're finding from Iran. Ironic. Iran and China and South Korea produce more good quality science than any place else I've seen. And they're getting it published in respected journals. Well, they're saying that a frequently prescribed antibiotic combination is used to treat many types of infections, including bronchitis, middle ear infections, and cystitis, which is a common infection of the bladder. And by the way, the most common reason that people get cystitis is because they're wiping but not washing after defecation. This is a big problem in America. It's like a national embarrassment. You know, we should be way beyond having to be lectured about washing our hands properly or just basic hygiene 101. We fail miserably, you know, and you can wash. If you wash, you're clean. If not, then bacteria migrate through the day because of the heat and the movement of the glute muscles, the cheeks. Bacteria go down and right into the urethra and up through the urethra into the bladder. Also, when people are having intimate relations, and the testicles are banging against the anus and then rub across the vaginal opening and rub across the which is normal and rub across the urethra, then that's how bacteria get in. One more reason to wash yourself. But I think people would rather, you know, pull out their teeth with pliers than practice proper hygiene. We are smelly, stinky, very gross nation, man. Oh, wow. Why can't we just be cleaner? In any case, they're showing that green tea helps you prevent and overcome cystitis. That's good by any measure. Then we have a study from Kumamoto University in Japan that extracts from the seeds of the Melinjo tree, that's Melinjo, can improve obesity and diabetes. Well, considering we have pre-diabetic, 60 million diabetic between 25 and 30 million, we're talking about almost nearly one-third of the American population suffer from this. So this is they're using the fruit, the flowers, and the leaves of Indonesia's Melinjo tree, and it's traditional medicine in Japan, and it's helping. And it stimulates the production of what is called adiponectin, A-D-I-P-O-N-E-C-T-I-N. That's a beneficial hormone that improves obesity and diabetes conditions. So just one more piece of the puzzle to help us, because it's strongly antibacterial, it's a powerful antioxidant, and you're getting polyphenols with that. And by the way, one compound is resveratrol, I mentioned earlier in the program, and it's been shown to induce this particular hormone in improved lifestyle-related diseases like metabolic syndrome. And so resveratrol also can help that as well. So diabetics and pre-diabetics should be using that. And from the University of California in San Francisco comes a new study found that people who walk more also have lower blood pressure. Now, there are other studies proving that, but this confirms the existing notions that keeping active is good for your cardiovascular system. So try to walk a minimum of 45 minutes very briskly, power walking a day, and you can bring your high blood pressure down. And that's good. And finally, teens who are bullied struggle with long-term mental health issues. University of Michigan. What we're not doing is we're not having discussions with parents of those bullying children to see when and under what conditions have you observed that your children become bullies, or are you even aware of it at all? Some parents seem to feign ignorance. I didn't know until the teacher or till someone else said that my child was a bully. That may be true in some cases, but also children are great at mimicking, so what goes on in the house frequently manifests in people's attitude outside the house. I remember when I was doing a documentary, The Drugging of Our Children, and I was down in Florida. I was down in Clearwater, Florida, and I'm getting ready to go into a school to film the teachers and the students. And they had agreed to allow me in to talk with them about, you know, how many children were on medications and for what, et cetera. But outside, when I was just waiting, I watched a woman who was outside the car, and she had her son, and she was walking back and forth with her son, and she was talking on the phone, and she was irritated, and she raised her voice, and she was yelling on the phone, and finally, she put her son down. And as she was walking back and forth, she was gesturing with her hand and pointing in the air with her finger, you know, as if to express some physical animosity. Her kid was walking up and down mimicking her. Absolutely, I'm watching this. And by the time we got the camera out, it was too late. She had gone in, and I'm wondering, how many times do parents realize your child is pulling everything out of that experience into themselves, and they can't differentiate what is good or not good, inappropriate or inappropriate behavior. So I think it's time that we had an honest national discussion about bullying, because we have more bullying, including physical harming, making fun of, excluding, and spreading rumors about people than ever before in my lifetime, and we're doing nothing to correct it. And by the way, being a teacher for 45 years, many of you came to the new school where I taught, or Pratt Institute, or School of Visual Arts, you know, and Fairleigh Dickinson, all the other places. You know that I don't teach just a lecture. I teach and then open it up, and then teach, open up, teach and open up, because you want the feedback from the students. And I believe that teachers today are one of the most oppressed and put upon groups in America. I've heard horror stories about how teachers have been verbally assaulted daily, mocked and ridiculed, physically assaulted, even sexually assaulted, where one teacher talked about some students thought it was a neat idea to go in and sexually expose themselves. The teacher was not able to get anything done by it. When they tried to talk with parents of students that were not learning and bullying, the mothers would come in and raise hell and threaten the teacher. How did we get to a place? This never happened for 100 years in American history. Instead of looking at the progenitor or the beginning of this crisis, we're merely looking at who to blame for it, and nothing is being done to correct it. And by the way, I don't want people being overstressed by the current crisis. This will pass, I estimate, in about 4 to 8 weeks. I believe we've made some correct moves, but an awful lot of incorrect, and the most incorrect thing we've done is trust the media. Its bias is palpable. And also, we're looking into the most logical and plausible reason that this occurred. And I'll get into this in an upcoming program. And if you're angry that this came from China, and we're mentioning the Chinese virus, then just remember that the next time you go to get Chinese food, or Italian food, or Tex-Mex food. Just, if you're going to be so biased about the truth, then apply that to everything else in your life. And by the way, the University of British Columbia said that inactive teens develop lazy bones. That's correct. An inactive teen has weaker bones than those who are physically active, and that can follow them right through their life, so they're more susceptible to osteoporosis and hip fractures, etc. So healthy skeleton development is crucial. And I've seen the actual objective scientific studies from our last group, and some people almost double bone density. There's no drug that could do that. And these are, one of the people's 94. Impossible to do, yet we did it, and it's there. And it's in the measurements, and it's in the biochemistry. We've proven it objectively. So we've already broken the 4-minute mile. Now we're seeing who else can do it. So also, for those of you who like to exercise, once you get into shape, not before, then according to the Mayo Clinic, you got to do high-intensity interval training, because that reverses aging. This is according to the Mayo Clinic study that shows high-intensity aerobic exercise performed in short intervals, like short bursts, can reverse the aging process. And that is terrific. Again, it's nice to see that they're talking about how, you know, you can impact the mitochondria and skeletal muscles and improve all of that if you do intensity workouts. I'm Gary Nall. We are 27 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, I want to go to this segment from Professor Jonathan Haidt on the coddling of the American mind. I think we can learn something from this. And by the way, to start this off, I took 3 people. Another 4th will be up today. And that is myself and John Q and Luann Panessi, all senior citizens, and I want to show you what we believe should be the new example of how we should age and could age if we put our mind to it and develop some discipline and get out of our comfort zones. Now, I want other people who are aged, please send in your photographs and a little story about yourself, because we'd like to profile you also. Again, I had a guy, and I was in Atlanta in the airport, just did a PBS presentation and a lecture. And I was ready to catch my flight back to New York City, and a guy comes over to me. And he says, "Hey," he said, I saw you on PBS last night." I says, "Thank you." And he said, "It makes a lot of sense what you're saying. It's just common sense." He said, "I'm a lawyer, and so I have to deal with, you know, deep, insightful issues about the law." And he said, "I teach law." And he said, "I listen to your broadcast when I can. I get it sent to me." And he said, because my brother lives in New York, and he said, "I'm not an example of health. I don't follow your advice right now. But I keep saying to myself, as long as Gary Noll is an example of health, then there's hope for me too. So I don't stay healthy to be a model of health for anyone else. I stay healthy to honor my authentic self. If I was the only one healthy, I would still do it, and I would still bypass all the, you know, the so-called social joys and pleasures that come from, you know, imbibing in pizzas and hot dogs and hamburgers or whatever else anyone thinks is important in their life. Sacrificing in the right way for the right reasons is an important part of our life process. Overindulgence in things that are not healthy is a part of our dark side and should be addressed, acknowledged and addressed. So just imagine right now when people are being forced to pay attention to how to build the immune system naturally, forced to wash their hands, forced to wash the surface areas or clean down the surface areas of their computer where otherwise they wouldn't care. So it seems like we're only willing to do anything when we're in a crisis. But we learn nothing from it. We learn nothing from Hurricane Katrina, nothing from Hurricane Sandy, nothing from the hurricane 2 years ago that devastated so much of Florida and North Carolina and the Bahamas and Puerto Rico. We've learned nothing. Unless we were ahead of the curve when no one else was, then you're prepared today. So if you can see people who are older than you or your age who look 20 to 30 years younger, then you can say, well, maybe there's time for me. Maybe I can do it. And you'd be right. I've worked with people at 100 years of age, 102 years of age. In fact, there was a very famous actress. She won 2 Academy Awards. Who knows her name? And, well, her name's Louise Brooks. And she lived in England or France the last several years of her life. But she was, I think she was 102 or 103. Anyhow, her nephew would drop by my office on a regular basis and tell me how she was doing, and she was following my protocols and vital and healthy right up to the end. So you're never too old to make changes. And I'm intend within 60 days to have people who we filmed, and then my crew went back to New York, but overweight, out of shape, depressed, all kinds of conditions. In 60 days, they're going to look like they're stepping out of a gym fitness magazine. You're going to see their abs, their endurance, their strength, their stamina. We've already done it. We're going to do it with this group. I want you at home to realize you can do the same thing. You just got to get out of your comfort zone and be motivated enough to want to. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Sure. Well, the book has its origins in an observation from my co-author, Greg Lukianoff. He is the president of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, defends free speech rights on campus. And in 2013, Greg began noticing that for the first time, it was the students who were asking for protections from words and books and ideas and speakers. Previously, students had protested speakers before, but they'd never before medicalized it. They acted as though if this person says something, I will be harmed, damaged, people will be traumatized. And so this was something new. And when they put it in terms of safety, well, then administrators have to respond. So this came in around 2013, 2014, and it brought with it a whole package of innovations, you might say. Microaggression training, safe spaces, trigger warnings. All this stuff appears from out of nowhere around 2013, 2014.
That's something I did not realize until I was reading your book. I thought it went back further, because I've been talking about the fragile stuff for a long time, but I didn't realize that this is a new generation. The millennials stop at 1995?
1994, that's right.
Okay, so now we're into the iGen, you call them, or Generation Z?
Right, same thing, that's right.
And they're even more fragile.
Yeah, well, so this is something that...
Who can we blame? Let's start blaming. I want to blame. Let's play the blame game.
Okay.
I say
well,
parents.
Let's see.
You go.
Okay. We'll do all the parents and we'll do all the teachers. So yeah, the basic finding, which I think surprised a lot of us assumed that the millennials were from 1982 to around 2000 or 1998. But kids born around 1995 had a very different childhood from kids born a few years before. And so research by Gene Twenge and others show that kids born after 1985, they don't get driver's licenses as much. They don't drink as much. They don't go out on dates. They don't have sex as much. What are they doing? They're sitting at home on their devices, talking with each other. And this seems to be changing social development. And we know this. This is not just some, you know, perception from outsiders, because the rates of anxiety disorders, depression, self-cutting, where they have to be admitted to hospitals, and suicide. All of these rates are way, way up, especially for girls, and it all begins right around 2011. And so it's when this generation first enters college campuses, and 2013, that's when all this new attitude about speech comes in.
Isn't another reason that they're sitting home instead of doing all those fun things is because the parents insist on watching them already?
But on the point about whether this is everywhere, so this is such a new trend. We only began to notice these things in the last couple of years. But what seems to be the case is that the anxiety and depression, the fragility, the mental illness, that's across the country, across social classes, across races. And that's why social media use is beginning in middle school. That seems to be the most likely culprit of several culprits. So that's all over the country. But the shout downs, the screaming at professors,
yes,
we've mapped that out. That is almost only in the Northeast and just the coastal strip of the West.
The sanitization of these social media sites, you know, you have a kid puts beautiful pictures of themselves on the site, and then another kid looks at it and feels that their life is less than that beautiful sanitization. Is that affecting them as well and creating a lot of this anxiety?
Absolutely. And that's probably the main reason why it's affecting the girls so much more than the boys. Because if you imagine, you know, all of the kids in America around 2007 to 2009, and you suddenly just drop millions and millions of iPhones all over the country and kids pick them up, what are the boys going to do? Oh.
All right, Jonathan Haidt, very profound thinker, but he takes very profound thoughts and puts them into very easily understood and common sense and reasonable language. Now we're going to go for part, just part, of the discussion we had yesterday about aging. And I read a segment, a little paragraph out of a book, and then got them to respond to it. And I'd like to hear you to hear their thoughts on this, all right? The greatest generation and their boomer children. It is my belief that today's senior citizens, the members of the greatest generation, are the new lost generation. They are the last of America's vanguard to have found meaning and purpose in the preservation and substance of the nuclear family and their communities and the nation. Before the arrival of boomer culture, preserving the health of these social units had always been a hallmark of American society. For the boomers' parents' generations, meaning mine and your parents, community defined a person's character. The greatest generation prided itself in what it had gained and what could be shared with others. There was a culture of authentic altruism. It was all about interconnectivity and relishing the time spent with children and grandparents, neighbors, having food on the table surrounded by family, a steady job, a public education system for the children, clothing, and a house were all that was essential. Stability is one of the key words that best defines boomers' parents. One important area where they observed a pragmatic sense of stability was in the way they understood money and handled their finances. For them, a person's monetary power was determined by the amount of money saved rather than speculative assets. In other words, they perceived their financial worth in very concrete rather than illusionary figures. Of course, credit cards did not exist then, and any kind of borrowing was generally the exception rather than the rule. This was a generation forced to live within its means, ensuring stability and continuity in their lives. That's just one paragraph. So let's see what that meant to you. Since you've all seen, growing up, the sacrifices your parents made, the stability within a household, especially if you had two parents, the additional stability of having their parents or your grandparents that also has had some input, the idea that you were a part of a family, and if you went to school, all the eyes in that neighborhood were on you. You know, you were never alone. People weren't afraid to lock their doors. They didn't. Or cars. And you could go out at night and walk anywhere in most neighborhoods because you weren't afraid, because there was a sense of community. There was a sense of pride in doing something and doing it right. We had what was known as character development. You were judged by the quality of your character. A handshake or your word was a bond, and it was considered sacred. As a result, your stability and your insight came from others wanting to be a part of your system of growth. So it wasn't just the teachers in school. It was everybody was informing you of what it was to do something right. Because if you did something wrong, you embarrassed everyone. You know, if you acted out in school, not only did the coach get on your case and the principal, by the time you got home, nobody was happy with your behavior and there was a consequence. Today, there's no consequence. So you have to kind of juxtapose what it's like today when a student could go in and sexually expose themselves to a teacher and nothing happens to the student. And if the teacher is angry and says something, the mother comes in and wants to beat the hell out of the teacher or files a Chapter 9. Now the teacher is under investigation, could lose their job. If a kid wants to smack a teacher, nothing happens. Curse, nothing happens. Not do homework and expect an A, nothing happens. None of that existed. None of the degradation and deplorable behavior that is so rampant everywhere now, in every school in America, none of that was allowed. Because you went to school to learn. When you came home, someone had worked hard to make sure you had a roof over your head and food on the table and clothes on your back. You were part of a community. With 95% of America today, that's all gone. Doesn't exist. So that has to impact you, and also think of all the seniors who are now still alive in their 80s and 90s who were there during the Great Depression, suffered 16 years of privations with the Great Depression and the Second World War, where, you know, you didn't have money. You would, my mother, you know, was one of those Rosie the Riveters and worked in a factory and got ration books, would get gasoline with rations and food with rations. So they planted gardens in the backyard. Everyone on every block had a garden. So just imagine what it's like to go in just two generations from a sense of stability, care, character, morality, ethics, manners, and then you jump to where we are today, where now one of the callers on my show today called in and said, now when young people get on buses, the seniors are expected to get up and give them their seat. When I was young and you were young, you got up. You didn't have to be told because you had respect for elders. There's no respect for elders today. They're considered so old and so worthless. Ageism is a rampant social phenomenon. It's a pathology of our psyche. So now, how does this relate to you? I'm going to hear you. Give me your feedback now. Yes, Bruce.
There's tremendous validity in what you were saying. I remember my grandparents and my parents. My parents were the greatest generation. My grandparents were immigrants. And both my parents, my father worked two jobs. My mother went to work when we were in first grade. And my grandparents basically took care of us when we were very young. So there was tremendous sacrifice. They were willing to make sacrifice for the greater good. So that was the we generation versus the me generation, which were the baby boomers, essentially. And also another thing about my parents is they had honesty and integrity. My parents never cheated on their taxes. They never cheated in their relationship. And they did try to show us good values. My parents never drank, smoked, or did anything bad in that respect. And they expected us to follow in their path. So their values are very strong, and they did believe in quality, I think. That was one of the big aspects of our lives is to achieve academically, and my parents wanted us to really excel in school. So that's basically what they were pushing for us, and we did have a sense of family, as you mentioned, and a sense of community. I grew up in a neighborhood in the Bronx. And I knew many of the adults in the neighborhood. There was a sense of community. It was relatively homogeneous. But it was a safe place. And my parents were frugal, not stingy. They were very generous, but frugal. And they never borrowed money throughout their lives. Never borrowed money. So exactly what you were saying, I think there's tremendous validity to.
Go ahead, your turn.
I remember growing up and... Well, when we were little, living in Manhattan, all the kids would come out and we'd be playing together. Ring Alivio, hide and seek. And I remember my mother would send us through the basement to go out the back door to go to across the street to the store. And I'd be by myself. I may have been 8 years old going across the street. And we didn't have to worry. Today, you wouldn't dare go through the basement. You know, both doors were open. And I remember... The parents would sit outside it would be in the summertime, maybe till 9, 10 o'clock, and the kids would all just be playing with each other. And then we moved to Alabama, and my mother worked very hard. My father, they've separated, so it was four of us. And my mother would be working 12-hour days. She would go to work, and when we were in the house, we'd be sitting around the table having a contest to see who could sing the best. Or something, and my brother would be the one that would decide who would be the best one to sing. So we'd be outside playing softball or something. But it was a community, and everybody knew everybody. The parents knew, you know, and the other parents could chastise you as well. And after school, you know, everybody would walk home together. But and at Thanksgiving, everybody would get together. But it was real community, and I do miss that. And now the generation after the paternal, my aunt and uncle, after they passed, everybody's separated, and everybody's gone their own way at holiday times, you know, except the immediate family. Every immediate family went their own way before my aunt lived in a brownstone, and everybody, all the sisters and brothers, and they were 18 sisters and brothers with children. And we would all be in that house, you know, on the floor, different floors, celebrating together. So, and today, living in Manhattan, I do see the older people getting up to give these children the seats. And I even said maybe a month ago, there were two little girls sitting on in front of the bus on the opposite side, you know, where the seats go sideways, facing each other. And the mother was on my side, and then there was me, and a man sitting with his little daughter over here. And an older man got on the bus with a cane, and he just stood over the kids, didn't say anything. So I said to the young man, can you please let this man have a seat? And the little girl started to get up. I said, no, no, the young man. The mother said nothing. And then I heard the man say, and the little boy got up, and he came over and sat here. And the man sitting with his daughter said, she should say something to the mother. And I said, but parents don't teach the children. And he, you know, he said no more, but that's the generation. I see the older people getting up to give these 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds.
What does that tell you when an older person, possibly with some physical limitation, and a young person doesn't see that?
Yeah, because they're all either in their cell phones or something, you know. Or,
but that
because that's what the parents teach them. You don't have to get up when they're that little.
But what does that tell you about the X generation or the millennial generation, and that's their kids?
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Just the disrespect, and that's the way they grew up, you know, in the society, the system. You know, you can't spank the kids, you can't say the Pledge of Allegiance, and you can't mention the word God, you know, so that's the system.
But as long as people stay quiet when a system is being assaulted, then you abdicate to the person that now has control. And that's unfortunate. Yes.
And today, people don't say anything because people will start a fight. You know, they're afraid to say anything because they don't know where that other person's coming from. You know, and they can start an argument. On the bus, you see it in trains.
Well, have you seen how many teenagers are violent?
Oh, yeah. TV.
Yeah, and slugging people and getting away with it, laughing. School teachers are abused all the time, and there's no power within the system. It is so corrupt by administrators who are worthless. Nothing trickles down to the student or to the teacher that allows them to be accommodated. It stops at where it's profit and power.
You've mentioned how there's enough money to go around for everybody.
There is.
I was on 125th Street last week, and the derelict, the people on the streets, it was awful. Mostly men, just hanging around on the corners, just, you know, and some of them nodding out. That's coming back, it seems, the drugs. And it's heart-wrenching to see that, you know, with so much that people have, and this is going on. You know, it's sad.
Well, don't you see it right now with the hoarding of food, where people want to get as much for themselves but not consider? We stopped selling more than one type of a product to a customer because I found some customers are buying 10 and 20. And I said, well, what if we run out? That is selfish then to the people who wouldn't have an opportunity to have anything. When I was growing up, when all of you were growing up, when Bruce's parents were, as he said, never had to borrow money. And I didn't know many people who would borrow money. Because then people would say, why did you have to borrow money? What did you buy you couldn't afford? What are you doing that you shouldn't have done? How could you do something differently? Everything was repurposed. All the clothes I was wearing were from my older brother, and that's how I learned how to sew. You know? And my younger brother got my stuff. Now, everything was repurposed. When we would have everyone having a backyard, and we didn't have big backyards, and most backyards are 20 by 40, right? 40 feet by 20. But it'd be loaded with vegetables, and you would share that. Everyone on a block would share something. So if you had peaches and someone had cherries, now you both had peaches and cherries. If someone was growing eggplant, someone tomatoes, everybody had eggplant and tomatoes. So we all cared. We go to the church generally for a cover dish dinner. Remember cover dish dinners? You can't do cover dish dinners day. Health won't allow you. You can't have a lemonade stand. Health departments won't allow it. With all the crap that I see being served that no one should eat, a kid wanting to go out and make some lemonade isn't the worst. Well, there we have it. And again, that was a short segment, but it gives you an idea of a new way of learning and processing information. And as I, you know, proceed through this study, I'll be doing at least a lecture or two per day. So we have a lot of new information coming your way. And you can download the whole clips by going to prn.fm, and then on the home page will be how you go, and Jesse will give you links to where you can watch these and therefore take notes and play them as often as you want. So that's it for today. We look forward to sharing a lot more tomorrow. And for the people who are doing the study at home, just a quick situation here. The Anti-Aging at Home Study Group, your kits and requisitions and supplements, all that are on their way. And
You'll get it all. The coronavirus has created problems and shortages, so it'll be just a day or two more, and everybody will get everything. And you have communication directly with Phil, who we're putting on every day, communicating with you, every day trying to help you. But sometimes it's difficult to get vitamin C because everybody bought it, stocking up. But it's coming back, and you'll be able to get it. And you got all those wonderful in-house things you can do on yoga, meditation, cooking. You got a copy of the cookbook. You got so much. You got abundance of materials. So we look forward to you using them. I'm still waiting for more people to arrive. And by the way, for people who want to come to the retreat in the middle of April, you'll have a wonderful time. Learn all about your immune system, how to strengthen it, how to relax, how to detoxify, and you'll be in a clean, safe environment. And for that, you'll have to call Luann, and she will work with you and help you out. All right? Jesse, could you give me Luann's number? I think I have it here. Yeah, I do. 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Because in the middle of our 60-day anti-aging, we're taking 1 to 2 weeks in the middle of April, about a month from now, to help WBAI earn some income to pay for premiums because they're really on the ropes financially. And they need some help, so I agreed to do this because it doesn't take me away from my normal schedule. But you're not on a protocol, meaning you can do as little or as much as you want. You can enjoy yourself. You'll be doing yoga, meditation, and artists. And we have one of America's most respected artists here. She's shown in the Hermitage Museum in Russia and the Vatican and all over the world. And she was chairman of the Department of Art at a major educational institution. And she's here as part of the anti-aging study. Plus, we have two other outstanding artists here. So you're going to be getting all these great art classes, and whatever you create, you get to take home. Plus, counseling and how to build your own body up and wonderful, fun lectures. All of our lectures are filled with humor because everything goes down a little easier if we can laugh in the process of learning. Call Luann if you're interested, 903-881-7008. Have a nice day, everyone.